Destiny said in admiration. You got the stars with you, girl. This is too freaky. What's his sign?
I don't know. I didn't ask.
Destiny screamed into the phone.
How many times do I have to tell you? That's the first thing you ask. How are you gonna know if you're compatible or not?
We just talked, Romy replied, unconcerned.
That seemed compatible enough. He's fun to talk to, and Destiny, he is so fine.
I hear you, girl, and I have not heard this from you before. He's gotta be an Aries or a Sagittarius. Those are the fire signs. Since you are Leo, you know that's your best bet unless you want to go with your opposite, which is an Aquarius. Something I would not advise. Fire and water do not mix, girlfriend.
You're nuts, Destiny. He could be an Aquarius. I don't know.
How can you have lunch with a dude and not be sure of his sign?
I'll find out for you, okay?
Relax. All I did was eat lunch with him one day. We didn't make wedding plans.
Romy laughed.
I sure hope his sign is compatible. This may be your soulmate.
Don't get carried away, Destiny, warned Romy.
I'm not sure if I believe in all that stuff you do about soulmates. All I know is, he's really, really... I can't put my finger on it, but he makes me feel special.
Uh-oh, the special finger feeling. I sure hope that scientific soulmate system package arrives soon. Looks like we're gonna need it.
Maybe not, mused Romy.
Girl, I may have to get my cards out for you. You're moving into serious territory awfully quick. You eating with him again tomorrow?
I think so. I hope so. Romy could feel herself blushing.
Oh, no, now she's hoping. I hate that I have to make up that test at lunch tomorrow. Meet me at my locker after school and find out his birthday.
For sure I will, Romy promised.
Hey, Destiny, she added.
What it is?
Do you realize that when we've been talking about incompatibility and stuff, we've only been talking about sun signs?
Yeah, so what's your point?
He's Hispanic.
So?
And I'm black.
So?
Neither one of us noticed.
Good. That's the way the world ought to be.
Destiny had her own sense of world order.
Yeah, you're right, agreed Romy. I'll wait for you after last bell tomorrow.
Okay. Later, girl.
Romy hung up the phone, thinking about what Destiny had said.
Chapter 15. Julio and Ben. Julio bounded into the band room, jumped over a music stand, and grabbed a bass viol and started to dance. Mr. Barnes, the teacher with the dreadlocks, just grinned. Ben, who was on the floor under the snare drum looking for his drumsticks, glanced at Julio with amusement.
So, who put ants in your pants and made you want to dance, Señor Julio?
Ben asked as he slid from under the drum. His hair was bright orange today.
Hey, Ben, my orange-haired amigo. Today I had lunch with a girl that at my school I never would have even noticed, but yes, I would have had to notice her. She's so pretty. She's brown, golden crispy, I sound like I'm describing fried chicken, and that's not fair at all.
Who is this foxy babe?
Her name is Romia Cabell. She is the prettiest girl I've ever met. That orange sweater made her brown skin and hazel eyes seem to glow. Or maybe it was her smile. When she smiled, she was like sunshine or something.
Yeah, I know Romy. She's cool.
but I've never seen her shine like that. Sounds like you're the one who was glowing.
Why is this coming out all wrong? I can't find the words to describe how I feel. I feel stupid and silly.
The rest of the class straggled into the room, and the bell rang. Everybody ignored it, however, including the teacher, who was helping students get their instruments tuned or tightened. Julio took out his saxophone and rubbed a soft cloth over it lovingly. He wasn't thinking about music, though. His mind was at lunch. Ben added, "I've known Romeette since 7th grade. She is a class act. Smart, pretty, and proud."
Julio mused. "You know what, Ben? I stood on a chair in front of the whole cafeteria and handed her a rose. I didn't care who saw me or what they thought. I would have tap danced on the table in a bowl of mashed potatoes if she had asked me to."
"You got it bad, Julio. Dancing and mashed potatoes?"
"All I know is she is the funniest, smartest, prettiest girl I've ever talked to. She made me laugh with her descriptions of her father on TV and his unbelievable news partner. I've got to watch the 6 o'clock news tonight."
"Oh, yeah. Good old Nanette. The whole town watches the news just to watch her mess up."
"And Romeette seemed really interested in my stories about my old school and all my lies about Texas."
"You lied? I'm proud of you, Julio. You're such a quick learner."
"Nah, man. We just talked about stupid stuff, like teachers and homework. We talked as if we had known each other forever. She likes music and sports and books."
"Does this perfect woman have any faults?"
"One weakness. She can't swim. But that's okay. I can teach her. Listen to me. I'm thinking about teaching a girl I just met how to swim."
"This is something really new for you, I guess."
"Oh, see. She's not like any girl I ever met before. She's got class and style and a kind of spark. The girls back home just didn't have it. She makes me feel comfortable and relaxed and natural. We're going to talk tonight at 9 on 9 after we do our homework. I can't believe this. For the first time since I moved here, I feel alive."
"I'm glad for you, man. Go for it."
The band teacher tossed his dreads, rapped on the podium, and started warm-ups. Band class was the last bell of the day, and they were all tired, so he tried to make it upbeat and fun. He grinned at Julio as if they shared a secret and led the group to a march beat. Julio, excited yet relaxed, grinned back and played like he was Kenny G. Chapter 16. Computer Chat.
"Dear Romeette, meeting you and talking to you was the high point of my day. You can make a cold day sizzle and a gray afternoon burn bright red. I know that you know everybody at that school, and that you're really popular. It was nice of you to spend time with a new kid. Julio."
"Julio, if you think the only reason I ate lunch with you, we never did get around to eating, did we, was because you were the new kid and I felt sorry for you, you're dumber than I thought you were. And quiet as it's kept, I'm not Miss Popularity. Sure, I have friends, but I'm no showstopper. I sat with you today because I wanted to. I've never met anybody like you before. You were so much fun to be with and to talk to. It must be the Texas hot sauce, because nobody around here even comes close to you and how you make me feel. I guess I shouldn't say that. Or admit that you make me feel different from any other boy I've ever met. But I don't feel up to being shy and playing those boy-girl games. Or maybe it's because we're not exactly face-to-face, and I can write what I'm feeling easier than I can say it. Romiette. I know exactly what you mean. All day I've been thinking of you. I feel like I've known you forever, and I want to know you forevermore. When I'm old and wrinkled and 80, I want to be able to talk to you. Does that sound stupid? I'm not afraid to tell you that I like you. Tomorrow when I see you, I have a surprise for you. I love surprises. Just no hot sauce, okay? And call me Romy. Romy, what a nice nickname. No hot sauce. I guarantee you like the surprise. Tell me, if you could win a $1 million lottery, what would you do? I wouldn't do anything stupid like buy 1,000,000 new outfits. I know that. Maybe just 1,000. Seriously, I don't know. I'm pretty happy with my life as it is. My friends and family, the sunshine, and my golden retrievers. Our dog just had puppies a few weeks ago. Want one? I'm like you. There's lots more that I think is important besides money. Puppies for one. I would love to have a golden retriever puppy. If my mom will let me. I'll ask, but I'm sure she will. She knew how much I hated leaving my dog behind. But she was a German shepherd and she was old, so we left her at my grandpa's ranch, where she had lots of kids to play with and lots of space. I hope you can have one of the puppies. Now you answer this one for me. If you had to die by fire or by water, which would you choose? If I had to die, and I don't plan to anytime soon, I guess I'd choose to die by water. Fire hurts. Water is cool and soothing and at least will comfort you before you get swallowed up in it. Why do you ask? No real reason. I think you can learn a lot about a person by their answer. Me? I'm scared of water. So I guess I'd choose fire. But you're right. Fire hurts. Maybe I'll just die in bed when I'm 99. Hey, when is your birthday?
March 3rd. Why?
My friend Destiny is into astrology. March 3rd. That makes you a Pisces, right?
Does that mean anything?
Destiny will know. She won't even look at a boy unless he's the right sign.
So, what sign are you?
I'm a Leo. Bright, sunny, cheerful, also regal and dominating, if you want to know the rest.
Lions are my favorite pets. I can handle it. See you tomorrow. Gotta go. Bye.
Peace out. Bye for now.
Chapter 17. Conversation. Julio turned off his computer and smiled. For the first time since he had moved from Texas, he looked around his small room with contentment. His room back in Corpus Christi was huge, with a large window that he liked to open at night to let in the fresh evening breezes. This room barely had space enough to turn around in, but his bed and desk and other furniture fit neatly into each corner. The walls were freshly painted, but bare. So Julio dragged one of the unopened boxes out of the closet on which his mother had neatly written Julio's room. He opened it slowly, trying not to remember the feeling of loss and anger that he had felt when he packed away the life he knew. Rolled on the top were his posters. The first one he tacked to the wall next to his bed was a purple-toned photo of Louis Armstrong playing his trumpet. He always liked that poster because it seemed to Julio that Louis Armstrong really enjoyed playing his horn, that he was happy just to be making music. The other poster was of a sailboat on a lake. The sky was bright with sunshine and promise. The boat dipped with confidence on the deep blue lake, and the sailor, a small figure on the deck, grinned with confidence that same smile of satisfaction and peace. Near the bottom of the box were other items that Julio no longer needed but refused to give up yet, reminders of his childhood. A baseball card of Hank Aaron. Probably not worth much since it had been ripped and taped together. That fight with Diego when they were 7 was not over the card, but over the bubblegum inside. It was much later they realized the value of the card, but it was too late. His rock collection. His 5th grade teacher had made the class collect one of each kind of rock or stone. Julio had searched for weeks, finally finding just about all of them. Igneous rocks, sandstone, granite. He loved the cool smoothness of them, their quiet strength. Everybody else had tossed or lost their rock collection. Julio kept them in a small plastic box. He knew the name of each one. His books. The one he read for a book report last year in school that he was sure he would hate, but ended up loving. His book on music. A book he had read from cover to cover several times about television and filmmaking. A dictionary. A computer manual. He set those on his desk. His video games. He hadn't set the machine up yet because he had no TV in his room here. Back home, he had never been upset when his mother sent him to his room because he had a TV, a stereo, a video game player, and a phone. She finally figured it out and after that sent him into the backyard to cut the grass or clean the gutters when she wanted to punish him. He had unpacked his CDs on the first day. He couldn't live without music. But in the box were tapes that he had liked a couple of years ago. He got those out and tossed them in his desk drawer. A small stuffed lion. He plumped it up and looked it over. He had won it tossing baseballs at the state fair last year. It looked at him with a silly grin. He could never explain why he had kept it, but now he was glad. Romiette will love it, he thought. Just then, his father knocked on his door. Hi, Papa. Where's Mom?
She went to the grocery store. How was school today?
Luis Montague was a tall man with broad shoulders, a huge mustache, and slightly graying hair. He had served in Vietnam for a year, then finished college and started in the insurance business. He looked at his son with pride. Julio would one day look just like his father, but he carried his mother's spark and sensibility. Julio would choose to fight when confronted with a problem, where his father would try to talk his way out of it. Luis admired that, but he often feared his son's leaps would lead him into trouble.
It was better, Papa. Much better.
Julio couldn't tell his father why, at least not yet.
Good. Are your classes difficult?
Luis asked with interest.
Not really. I like band.
Luis grinned.
Of that I have no doubt. But what about the academics?
No sweat, Papa. I'll be able to handle it. It's just hard coming here in the middle of the school year.
I know, Julio. I understand how rough this is. Are you making any friends?
Well, I met a really nice girl.
A girl? Now that's a good sign that things might be looking up. Is she pretty?
Yeah, Papa. She's really fine. She's smart and funny, and she makes me smile. I like talking to her. We met on the internet. It's funny. I was on a chat line in a room with a bunch of people, and she was in the room too, and I said something about hating it here and missing Texas. Somehow she stood out in that crowded room. It turned out she lives here in Cincinnati, and before we knew it, we were in a private chat room, zipping messages back and forth.
Julio's face was animated and excited just talking about Romeette.
You spend too much time on that computer.
The smile on Julio's face dimmed. He grew sullen and much quieter.
You want me to have friends, don't you?
Yes, son, but real people, not voices on a computer screen. You need to get out in the world more.
Luis just couldn't understand Julio's fascination with chat rooms. Computers were for calculations or file gathering, for work. Chat rooms were a waste of time, as far as Luis could tell.
That's what I've been trying to tell you, Papa. You don't ever listen to me. This girl I met on the internet is a real person. She goes to my school, and I like her. Is that real enough for you?
I'm sorry, Julio. I'm glad you found someone to take away the loneliness.
Papa, she has some golden retriever puppies. She's giving them away. Do you think maybe, since I had to leave King?
Perhaps. Ask your mother. Our place here is so small. What is this girl's name? You brighten up when you speak of her. She must have made quite an impression in so short a time.
Yeah, she did. Her name is Romeette.
Is she, French?
No, Papa. She's black.
Black?
Black. African-American. Black.
Oh. Is that wise?
Wise? What do you mean?
Julio felt his jaws begin to tighten. His father sat down on the bed and sighed.
Well, he said slowly,
we hear so many terrible things on the news, and you know what problems we had back in Corpus Christi with the black gangs. And it seems like we just escaped from all those problems, and now the first person you hook up with is some black kid.
Julio's anger erupted.
She's not just some black kid. She's smart and nice, and she's one of the few people in that whole school who've been friendly to me since I've been there. Have you forgotten that gangs of Mexican kids roamed our school and were fighting with the black kids back home? And on the news at home, who are the bad guys, Papa?
Julio's eyes were challenging and fiery. His father decided not to push the fight.
You're right, son. I'm sorry. I overreacted. It's not as if you're going to marry this girl. I'm glad you found a friend. And sure, let's get a puppy. Perhaps it will make this place feel like home.
But his father sighed once more as he left Julio's room, as if he sensed trouble ahead. Chapter 18. Romeette's Journal.
I met Julio at lunch yesterday again. He wasn't standing on the table this time, but he was there before I was. He grinned and looked really glad to see me, and suddenly I felt shy. I wondered if my hair was smooth, or my breath was smelly, or my shirt was wrinkled. But as soon as we started talking, I forgot all that. His voice has a soft lilt to it that makes me feel comfortable and safe.
He told me all about his home in Texas and his grandfather's ranch and his friends there. I found myself wondering if he had a girl back in Texas. Surely someone as good-looking as Julia would have a girlfriend. But he never mentioned it, and I didn't have the nerve to ask. I wonder why I even care. He's just a guy at school, but he's so much more than that. I look forward to seeing him, talking to him, being with him. I think about him when we're not together and wonder what he's doing. This is not like me, and I don't even mind. All through my morning classes, I found myself thinking about that stupid surprise he talked about. When I got to lunch, I found on the table a small stuffed lion. It was furry and soft and the color of caramel pudding. I looked at him hesitantly and smiled. "For you," he said simply. "Keep it close to you and think of me when you touch it." He looked suddenly embarrassed and pretended to be fixing the bright orange bow around the neck of the little lion. I'd never been given a gift that was so thoughtful and wonderful. I felt all shy and embarrassed again, like my thoughts were naked or something. "I love it," I said quietly, hugging the little lion close to me. "I'm going to call him Pudding," he said. "Keep him in your book bag, and when you reach in to get a notebook, or lunch money, or a peppermint, I'll be there with you." How did he manage to make a stupid piece of golden fuzz seem like a million-carat diamond? I wanted to give him something then, something to show I was interested, but not too personal. I dug down in my book bag and came up with my little gold keychain. It had my initials, RRC, engraved on it. I got it for my birthday last year. I wanted him to have it. I told him as I gave it to him, "Hang on to this until I get some car keys, okay?" He rubbed it shiny with the tail of his T-shirt, hooked it onto a loop of his jeans, and said he'd be glad to be the keeper of my keys. Somehow he made that sound sexy. We sat there grinning at each other, ignoring the rest of the cafeteria, the rest of the school, the rest of the world. Then the trouble started. Halfway through lunch, Rashad and Terrell, two dudes who hang with the gangbangers, stopped by our table. I remember both of them from kindergarten. They used to be silly and sweet, but they scare me now. It's like they're angry all the time. They walk around the halls with matching purple jackets and frowns. They never do homework, but even the teachers seem a little scared and don't bother them about it. I'm not sure if they're in the gang, because nobody comes out and says so, especially to somebody like me. But they all hang together on the corner by the bus stop after school. They take kids' bus money and sometimes even push kids around or knock them down. Anyway, they stopped at our table and just stared at us. They didn't say anything. They just looked. Julio glanced at them, started to say something, but changed his mind and decided to ignore them. They left after a few minutes, but they looked real hard at me, as if to give me some unspoken message. They left a chill behind them. The silly, friendly mood of our lunch conversation had been ruined. We finished quickly and promised to write tonight on email. Neither one of us said much. It's hard to know what to be afraid of when you don't even know what the threat is. Chapter 19.
Julio and Ben. The final bell rang. All the band equipment was put away, and Julio and Ben headed out to catch their bus. Julio stopped by his locker to get his history book, and Ben, hair buttercup yellow today, put his history book away.
"Don't you ever do homework, Ben?"
Julio asked as he tossed his book into his bag.
"Not if I can help it, man. Homework goes against everything I believe in, like freedom and independence. How am I going to start a revolution like Sam Adams and his boys did back in 1776 if I don't practice now?"
"But you get good grades anyway,"
Julio noted in admiration.
"Ah, my friend who needs his nose pierced. I read all the time, much more than the teacher assigns. I go to the library, and I get so involved with the stories and the lives of the people in the history book that I end up knowing enough to teach the class. But I'd never tell the teacher. He thinks I'm Ben the Weirdo. That's cool with me."
"You've got enough body piercing for both of us. Is that a new one on your eyebrow?"
"Yeah, I was bored, and it drives my mother crazy. You know, I'll probably end up being the corporate lawyer she wants me to be. But I'm gonna have fun on the journey."
"Like the safety pins in your ears?"
"Why buy jewelry? I believe in self-expression."
"For real? I bet little old ladies on the bus get up and move when they see you coming."
"Yeah, I love it. Here I come. Leather jacket, dog collar on my neck, blue or pink or green hair, and all my visible body parts pierced. I sit down next to one of them and look real slowly over at her. And then I grin, showing lots of teeth."
"Why do you do that, Ma?"
Julio asked, laughing.
"Why not? Life's a trip. Enjoy the ride. So, speaking of tripping, how was dining with Miss Dynamite today, mi amigo?"
Julio grinned at the thought of Romeette, then frowned as he remembered the rest.
"Lunch today with Romy was great, at least at first. We laughed and rattled on together like we've known each other for years. We talked about her mom's shop and her dad's TV show. That Nanette Norris is a real trip."
"Yeah, I saw it last night. She kept stumbling over words like maintenance and metropolitan. It would have been funny if it weren't so embarrassing. Old Nanette is my kind of girl. Pretty and stupid."
Julio added,
"It looks like Romy's dad tries real hard to keep a straight face, but in those little sections just before the commercials when they have to make small talk on the air, you can see he's straining to act like he likes her. It must be rough."
Ben and Julio walked down to the corner, past the little store where kids bought chips and soda and illegal cigarettes. The weather was cold, but the sun was shining, letting them know spring would show up sooner or later. They had missed the early bus, so they knew they had at least a 20-minute wait. They stood in silence for a few minutes, Ben's corn-bright hair blowing in the chilly breeze. Ben said finally,
"So, tell me, did you give Romy the lion?"
Julio laughed.
"Yeah, I was scared at first, but I think she liked my little surprise. And even though it was just a small stuffed lion, she treated it like it was a gift from a king."
Ben bowed down in mock reverence and announced, "All hail, King Julio!" Julio punched his arm, chuckling.
"Cut that out, Ben."
"Oh, sire, tell me, did the Princess Romeette honor you with a gift as well? Or have you changed your initials to RRC and decided to advertise it on the loop of your jeans?"
He wouldn't stop bowing. Other students at the bus stop smiled, but they were used to Ben's antics.
"Yeah, she gave me the keychain," he admitted.
"Aw,
How sweet. He was still bowing, only now he looked more like a penguin than the subject of a king.
I wasn't sure if I should take it at first, Julio began.
Why? Ben finally stood straight up.
You think too much, man. But it seemed like she really wanted me to have it, so I thanked her and hooked it onto my own keychain, this one with the Texas Rangers logo on it.
Good man. Wise choice. So, a perfect day?
Not exactly. The family is still in the house.
This ain't good, Julio.
You telling me?
Me and Romy were just finishing the last of the cafeteria chocolate milk, which is probably the only thing they can't mess up. And these two dudes came up to our table and stopped. I looked up to say something, thinking they were friends of Romy's, but they didn't smile, and they had on purple.
What did you do?
There was nothing to do. They just stared at me. I don't think they liked me talking to her. They didn't say anything. They just looked at me, looked at her, and walked away.
What you gonna do?
Wait and see. And watch my back. For now.
What does Romy think?
I don't know. I thought I had escaped that stuff. She looked as scared as I was. I think she knew them, but they weren't friends of hers. Why should anybody care who I have lunch with? Romeo is the only girl in the whole school who's been friendly to me, and now we're threatened because of it?
What did she say?
We didn't talk about it after they left. We both left the cafeteria in a hurry. We promised to write each other on email, but I wonder what she thinks about all this. I wonder if this will spoil something that hasn't even had a chance to start yet. And I wonder if she's as scared as I am.
Don't let the Purple Panther sweat you, man. Maybe they're just showing off.
I don't think so. They'll be back. I'm sure of it.
Just chill. And ignore them. You coming to jazz band tryouts next week? You're pretty good on the saxophone.
And you're not bad on the drums, Julio returned.
Percussion is my life, howled Ben as he pounded on his book bag like a drum. I just love to make noise.
Do you play other instruments? Julio asked.
The bus, finally, could be seen in the distance, lumbering slowly toward them. Ben shrugged.
Clarinet, vibes, bongos, and I'm a drummer in a rock band on weekends. What can I say? I'm a musician extraordinaire, Señor Julio.
You play anything else besides that sax? I can play the mandolin, Julio admitted sheepishly. Not much use for that in a marching band.
For real? You got one?
Yeah, I brought it with me from Texas.
That's fat. How good are you?
Whenever you have an opening in your rock band for an extra mandolin player, I'm your man, Ben.
Actually, I'm pretty good. I played a little on weekends with a small Tejano band in Corpus Christi. I miss all that stuff.
It must be rough moving so far from home. I've lived here all my life. Maybe that's why I try to liven things up around here. Everything's the same, especially in the winter. Kinda
gray.
You got it. So I wear yellow hair and safety pins, and nobody knows all I want to do is make music.
You're okay, Ben. I'll bring my mandolin one day and show you how to play it.
Don't worry about me. That's the kind of thing that melts a girl's socks off. Somebody like Romeo would think it was so romantic.
You make good sense even if you do have a ring in your nose.
It only hurts when I sneeze.
Or when somebody knocks it off your face.
Don't remind me. Here's my bus. Catch you tomorrow.
Later, Ma. Here's my bus pulling up in her ear.
Chapter 20. At the boutique. Romeette sometimes complained to her friends, but she loved working at her mother's store. She'd take the short bus ride from school to the shop, and always, just before she went inside, she'd stand a few yards from the door and watch the people who passed by, those who looked and those who went inside. Downtown sidewalks were always busy with shoppers, commuters, and the thousands of nameless people who worked in the offices. Romy called them the suits and the shoes. The suits were the men in the office uniform. Dark jacket, dark slacks, khaki on Friday, reddish tie, white shirt. They all carried briefcases, and all of them believed themselves to be much more important than they really were. The really important ones didn't have to walk where they needed to go. Someone drove them. The shoes were the women who wore variations of the men's uniform. Only they wore huge, white, athletic shoes with their blue suits. They carried their stylish shoes in a bag and walked purposefully in their play shoes to their destination, where they did not play. They were serious and focused, these women, determined to make it in a man-made world. Romy admired them. People who usually had no time to notice whether the weather had changed or the homeless person sitting on the corner would often slow down at the window of the boutique. Lady Brianna Capel had a sense of style and drama, and her window displays were delightfully eye-catching. This month, the display included three stained-glass windows crafted with intricate flower designs, a fountain from which bubbled clear, cool water, dozens of live tulips blooming 2 months early, and a sampling of outfits placed artfully among them. Sometimes people just walked in out of curiosity. Most of them left with a purchase or two. Every time Romy walked into the store, she would stop to enjoy the sensory feast inside. Fountains bubbled, soft music soothed, and mild incense blended with the smell of new cloth and old stories made Romy grin with delight. It was here that she learned of all the African tribes, those of the past who established great kingdoms long before European kingdoms began, and those of the present who lived and worked with great dignity and pride. It was here that Romy had heard the wondrous folk tales of the storytellers, and it was here that Romy and her mother had become very close. They worked well together, and as Romy got older, she had been given more responsibility. She liked being in the store alone, too, as she was today. Her mother had to run to the bank for a few minutes, and Romy decided to rearrange the jewelry display since the store was practically empty. The door chimed as it opened, and Malaika Grimes walked in. Romy and Malaika had been friends when they were much younger and lived near each other. But Malaika's parents had divorced, Malaika had moved, and she had grown up facing lots of pain and unhappiness. It had changed her from the giggly, cheerful friend Romy remembered to a hard-acting, foul-mouthed girl who smoked, drank, and wore her skirts very tight and very short. When they ran into each other at school last year, Romy almost didn't recognize Malaika. They had exchanged phone numbers, promised a call, but there was very little to say anymore.
"What's up, Romyette?"
Malaika said coolly. She was wearing a body-hugging purple sweater, a short black leather skirt, and purple tights.
"Hey, girl. Not much.
Just chilling here in my mom's store.
Got any new stuff in? Malaika fingered the jewelry, then tossed it back onto the counter as if it were junk.
Yeah, some live kente cloth dresses over there, and some jewelry to die for in that case over there.
Romy felt uncomfortable. Malaika had not come to shop.
Doesn't your mama give you whatever you want out of here? Malaika asked.
Give? You must be crazy. My mother is in business for the money. She pays me for working, so she expects me to pay for things I see and like. She takes it out of my check.
From what I've seen you wear, you must not get a very big check. Malaika laughed sarcastically.
Yeah, I had to learn to control myself.
Romy busied herself by dusting the jewelry case. She was trying not to treat Malaika with suspicion, but she couldn't figure out what she wanted. Finally, Malaika let her purpose be known.
Hey, Romy, she said innocently. Who was that I saw you eating lunch with?
Romy knew instantly where the conversation was headed. This she could handle. She paused a minute, looked Malaika up and down slowly, adjusted the water flow from the fountain, then turned to Malaika and said boldly,
"That new boy, Julio, what's it to you?"
"The Puerto Rican?"
"He's not Puerto Rican. He's Mexican. Actually, he's Texan. He's from Corpus Christi."
"He's kinda cute, if you like that type."
Malaika sauntered past Romy as if to look at the candle display.
"What do you mean, that type?"
Romy could feel the anger building.
"Well, you know, Mexican. Hispanic-like."
"What's wrong with that?"
Romy felt as if she needed to defend Julio. She wasn't sure why, but she felt protective.
"Nothing."
"Hey, why you getting all salty?"
"I just said."
Malaika was enjoying this. She knew she was irritating Romy. That was her purpose.
"You acted like something was wrong with me eating lunch with a Mexican-American."
"I don't see why you would want to. You know, you've always been heavy into African clothes and jewelry and stuff."
"It just seemed odd to see you giggling like a third grader with that kid that's so obviously, let me see how I can put this, Spanish."
Malaika smirked.
"I was not giggling. He's funny and clever, and he makes me laugh. What's it to you anyway?"
"Ain't nothing to me.
Some other folks now, they might give a care."
"Do what you want. Can't even have a conversation with you no more.
Catch you later.
Peace."
At that, Malaika sauntered out of the store. Romy stood there shaking and angry.
"Peace?
Doesn't look like it.
I wonder what that was all about. Something's going on here."
Chapter 21. Phone Call. Romy lounged on her bed and waited for the phone to ring. She'd finished her homework, taken her shower, talked to Destiny twice, and now, just before sleep took over, she knew that Julio would call. She picked it up on the second ring. "No use letting him think I'm desperate," she thought.
Hola, Romy.
Julio's voice melted her socks, but she wasn't going to let him know, at least not yet.
What's up, Julio?
You dealing with that purple warning we got today?
So what was that all about? I could tell you knew those thick-looking dudes, but they didn't seem like they wanted to sit down and share a Coke and a smile.
Romy sighed. Julio, we got gangbangers like everybody else. They just never bothered me before.
I know. I can smell gangbangers from a distance, and those dudes were stinking with their power and threat. They've been hassling me, but you've got nothing to do with that.
Hassling you? Why?
Because they can. At my old school, it got so bad that they'd walk into a hall and everyone would run inside the nearest classroom. Teachers, too. One teacher, Mr. Cordero, tried to stand up to them last year. He insisted they take off their colors in his class, and he refused to run the other way when they walked the hall, as they called it. He would look them straight in the eye and tell them he was not afraid of them.
He died in a car accident one weekend. His brakes failed, so they say. No one could prove anything, but the gangbangers walked the halls with more freedom after that. The principal, a timid little man, wrote letters and sent memos, but he would lock his office doors when it was time for a gang walk.
Oh, Julio, that's scary. Did you have a lot of gangs?
We had some. There was an all-girl gang who called themselves the Sisterhood. Really just a bunch of little wannabes who wanted to be bad and wanted to be noticed and wanted to be seen with the dudes in the main gangs. The big gangs had organized crime connections from New York. I know because the gangs seemed to show up all of a sudden. We had about 5 new kids enrolled in the school. Hard-looking dudes who didn't look like 11th graders. They spent a lot of time hanging with the fringe kids. You know, the kids who come late or skip school or hang on the corners after midnight. Before we knew it, there were meetings and colors and handshakes. And all of a sudden, those kids had money and drugs and clothes and power. I guess is the best way to say it. And those 5 transfer kids dropped out, just left. Our school was rough before, but it changed. Instead of fist fights, kids got cut with knives. I knew lots of kids who had guns in their book bags.
Guns in their book bags? But I guess I shouldn't be surprised. I know the same kinds of kids.
I bet they look the same. Not much nerve, no real friends. Scary. Like on the news. You got racial gangs? Or mixed, like in West Side Story?
Yeah, I remember West Side Story. Our English teacher showed it to us last year when we read Romeo and Juliet. That was a good movie.
I remember one gang was Americans, mostly white kids. But I think they threw a couple of black kids in there to make it look good. The other gang was Puerto Rican kids. Their leader was played by an actor who was Greek. So much for Hollywood.
Reality is a lot scarier.
You got that right.
Romy, did you notice that our names are almost like the ones in the play? Only backwards? Do you think that means something? Are we destined for doom or romance? Or is it just weird?
Romy grinned, glad that Julio had noticed too.
Yeah, I recognized our names.
It's impossible not to.
I think it's an awesome coincidence. Who knows what it means for us? I guess time will tell, or maybe fate.
Who knows? The kids in that story both ended up dead, didn't they? From gang wars, sort of.
It was families, not gangs, in Shakespeare. Scary enough and close enough to give me chills, though.
We had two rival gangs at my old school. The Ramones were all Mexican-American kids, and they hated everything that wasn't deep-roasted in Spanish stuff. The other gang was all black kids. They called themselves the Black Daddies, and they were the ones that just appeared overnight, it seems. The Ramones got together when it looked like the Black Daddies were taking over the school. So when they had gang walks in the halls, the Daddies would take the third floor, and the Ramones would take the second floor. Only kids that the gang approved of were safe, and no one really knew if they were on the safe list or not. Both gangs would recruit guys to fight and girls to hang with them. The girls liked the gangbangers because they always seemed to have money and cars and expensive clothes. What they called wars would start on Friday and continue through the weekend. On Monday, the winner would walk the first floor as a sign of dominance for the week. It was a strange system, but we understood it and it worked. Until Mr. Cordero. He tried to change things, and he died. Everyone was afraid. No one was learning. No one was teaching. Kids were getting hurt, so we left. Do you think my family is chicken? No way, Julio. I can't believe it was that bad. I hope it doesn't get like that here. So far, we've only had this one gang. You're either in it or you're not. Most kids don't fool with the gang kids. But those who do are mean and scary, and it seems like they only think with one giant, demented brain cell instead of having any independent thoughts at all. The dudes who stopped by our table at lunch were all in the gang. They call themselves the Family or the Devil Dogs. All the kids in it are African American. They all wear purple every day, and they carry heavy dog chains in their pockets. They don't do homework, and they don't do clubs or activities or any of the normal stuff kids do in school. They spend a lot of their time thinking up ways to intimidate other kids, like me and you today. It's much easier to give up your table in the cafeteria than get punched and have your food pushed on the floor. I know a girl who got jumped in front of the bus stop last week. She had made the mistake of breaking up with a devil dog. She was out of school for a week healing up. Romy, why do you think they were threatening us? Me, I can understand. Why you? They're black, you're black? Makes no sense to me. Well, the only thing I can think of is they don't like it 'cause you're not black. They don't know me very well, but they know my mom is big into African culture and I work at her store. But there's no way I'm gonna let them tell me who I can talk to or eat lunch with. No way. You know, now that I think about it, this girl came into the shop today, talking about you and me and why we're eating together. I thought it was a little weird, but she was wearing purple, and I think I've seen her hanging around Terrell and his boys. So what do we do if they come back, Romy? There's no way I let them threaten you or hurt you. You'd protect me, Julio? With my life. Wow. Nobody's ever told me that before. But maybe we're jumping the gun. All we had was a couple of idiots stare at us at lunch. Nobody is talking about death threats. I'll see you tomorrow at lunch. Good night, Romy. Good night, Julio. Bring the hot sauce. We may need it. Romy hung up the phone and mused about the day's events. It was great that Julio seemed to really like her. But why all the hassle from gangbangers? Didn't they have more important battles to fight?
She fell asleep, frowning about the possibilities of the future. Chapter 22. Ben and Julio. Ben and Julio had just changed for gym class. Julio liked gym. He had a strong upper body. Plus, he was a fast runner. The girls in the class noticed his muscular arms on his first day of class. The guys were learning he could get the ball where it needed to be. Today they were playing volleyball. Lots of noise, wax, and an amazing amount of excitement over getting a small white ball back and forth over a net.
Hey, my man Julio, give me a lunch report. This is better than a soap opera or a talk show,
Ben called as he ran across the gym to toss the volleyball into the basketball hoop.
You're crazy, Ben. You can't even make a basket with a volleyball, said Julio, laughing. Watch how he's done.
The ball swooshed smoothly into the net just as the teacher blew the whistle to choose teams. Julio and Ben sat on a bench near the back of the gym. They let the younger kids play first, since there was not much challenge playing ninth graders. They'd play in a few minutes when the juniors and seniors took the floor.
So, tell me, dude, what's up with you and Romy?
Julio smiled as he retied his gym shoe.
Romy and I met for lunch again. She looked good. She had on this African dress with a matching scarf. She said it came from Kenya at her mom's shop. She looked like some kind of queen or something. A queen chomping on French fries.